Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Jonah Kerry is on Twitter at Jonah Kerry, K-E-R-I, and he of CBS Sports and the Jonah Kerry podcast joins us for his weekly appearance on the Bernstein and McKnight show as we talk MLB, Cubs, and Sox. Jonah, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
We're good.
Hanging in.
What do you think of all of the hot starts in baseball? What's the most real and what's the most dubious?
I guess dubious would probably be the Pirates, but I do think they're better. Their preseason projection was 73.5. They were one of my overpicks, and I stand by that. I think they're more of a 500 team than they are this good, though. But people overreacted to two name guys getting traded, Gerrit Cole and Andrew McCutchen, because they're name guys. But the bottom line is we literally have two guys who've taken over for them, and Jameson Taillon and Gregory Polanco. So things have just improved in the sense that the talent that they always had is on hand is doing better for them. You know, are they going to be this good all season? Are they going to run away with the division? Are they going to beat up on the Cubs? No, but they can be a competitive team, certainly.
I guess I assumed that you were going to say the New York Mets at 10-1 to start the season. And why didn't you?
Because they're the other team that's also, that would be my other choice.
Okay, all right. Just wanted to make sure.
Yeah. No, I don't think the Mets are going to sustain that either, but the Pirates are in first place as well. Yeah, I had the Mets being slightly better than the Pirates this year just because they do have those young pitchers. Syndergaard and DeGrom exist, and there was some possibility the other young guys would pitch well. The difference with the Mets, and you can say that about the Angels too, by the way. Everybody's talking about Ohtani and Trout and all that stuff. Both the Angels and the Mets have had extraordinary performances from their bullpens, and that's not usual. There's no reason based on the personnel in those bullpens that you say, wow, these guys are lights out. They're like the Yankees. They're like the Royals of 2014. That's not accurate. You're talking about Jim Johnsons and Kenyon Middletons and guys like that doing well, and Hansel Robles lighting it up for the Mets. So I'm dubious of that stuff. But, some of the core players, can Syndergaard come back from injury? Of course he can. Can Jay Bruce be a part of that lineup? Sure he can. So that team can be 83 or 84 wins. I don't think that is unrealistic. Yeah, 10-1, of course, is not going to sustain.
I wonder, as this Cub team then has kind of struggled up and down and had some solid performances from guys you really wonder about at 6-6 and had some kind of blow up some there too. We were talking about John Lester a bit the other day and how he may have to adjust the sights for what he's doing given players' propensity to swing at lower pitches. What is the aging curve look like to you on John Lester?
Aging curve, it's pitchers are weird because it's not exactly the same thing as the hitter's curve. With the hitter's curve, we have it pretty much locked down. With pitchers, it doesn't always go the same way because sometimes there are things like figuring stuff out that you could be a pitcher, a thrower, and then you develop into a pitcher. And so you have guys who can last longer. Look at Verlander. Verlander is still throwing hard, and he's just a smarter pitcher. He's absolutely dominant at this point in his career. I think in Lester's case, he lost it. And frankly, you could lose it as a pitcher at 23 just as surely as you can at 33. So I think it's one of those things where it's not only just velocity or whatever, like command leaves you, things like that. I don't know that you can attribute that directly to age. It's just the arm only has so many bullets in it, and eventually you just run out. And, I can't say for sure that's what happened with Lester, but it's certainly a possibility we have to consider.
The teams in the so-called Big Seven that have been middling along, we have the aforementioned Cubs at 6-6. The Yankees are 6-7. The Washington Nationals also at 6-7. Any commonality in these kind of meh starts for what are still expected to be great 90-plus win teams?
There's some injuries. Obviously, you look at the Nationals with Daniel Murphy. The injuries here and there have certainly happened to a bunch of teams. There's a bunch of guys going on the disabled list every day, but sometimes you just run into something. Because there are so few games, two sides of a coin can be explained in the same way. For instance, the Mets rolled over the Nationals. Well, look, we've just explained the Mets and the Nationals. Had the Nationals swept that series, the Mets would be three games worse, the Nationals would be three games better, and there probably wouldn't even be a narrative. We wouldn't be talking about it. So, I think that small sample is the biggest narrative, maybe with an assist from injuries.
As you look down a couple of weeks from now, 4 or 5 maybe, is there Is there a marketplace that's starting to develop at all? I mean, are there needs and wants for some of these teams with injuries start to pile up? I get so anxious around trade deadline time, and I want it to be here already, not just for the weather. But anything drawn up yet, or are we still in the too early 11 games played? Connor, slow down, buddy.
Yeah, we're definitely in the slowdown phase. There's no doubt about that. And I think what the other thing that you do is you look for organizational depth, right? So, mm-hmm. You know, the Nationals, Adam Eaton, for instance, goes back onto the table as he says, oh, gosh, that injury-prone guy's on a DL again. I'd feel a little bit better about Eaton if I had Victor Robles healthy. He had all kinds, or looked like he was going to have all kinds of trouble when he made that diving attempt the other day. Now they're saying nothing's broken, he should be fine. Let's hope so, because, I mean, if you're a contender, those are the things that you want is to have, you know, backup plans, because otherwise you have to go out on the trade market. You have to raise your farm system to make a trade. So I think the teams that are able to withstand this the best are going to be best off. And then you literally just go to double A and triple A and you say, who do they have who can necessarily patch? You know, if the Cincinnati Reds were a good team, they're not. But if they were, I'd say, oh, wow, they lost Eugenio Suarez, one of the most underrated players in all baseball, really terrific all around third baseman. No problem. They have Nick Senzel as a top five prospect. They can just bring him up. Reds are obviously not good, but that's the kind of thing that we're talking about here, is just having a safeguard in place.
Last night, Joe Mauer gets his 2,000th hit, and I've always found Mauer a uniquely interesting player, particularly in his statistical profile, because he's not a typical catcher. He certainly hasn't been typical offensively of catchers maybe in the era before him. Had power, lost power, had the strange injury of the bilateral leg weakness, I believe it was termed. And boy, it's when you look at his baseball reference statistical comparables, You have no idea, looking at these names, even what kind of player. Sometimes it's obvious, and it's just amazing that this is a catcher, and his most similar batters through age 34. There are five Hall of Famers in this group, but you're looking at names like Alan Trammell, Bill Madlock, Julio Franco, George Kell, Tony Lazzari, Arky Vaughn, Ray Durham, Craig Biggio, Marty McManus, and Michael Young. There's just something. Wow. I don't know that we're ever going to see a full-time catcher with comps quite like this. Am I right?
Yeah, and you know, the other guy reminds me of a little bit is Buster Posey, to be honest with you. Go look at Posey's career track, too. He had that power, and all of a sudden he's like a 10-home-run guy who hits for average and has a high on base. Maybe that's the same progression we're talking about. You know, it's possible that when you're an extraordinarily talented all-around player who happens to catch, you know, something's going to leave you, and maybe that thing is power. Now, sample size of two, and we'll see. But it is a demanding position. We know about the many injuries that he had, and in fact, he would get called soft by the Minnesota media, which was totally unfair. So maybe there's something to that. But, I mean, as far as batting average and on base goes, you know, even as his power left him, he still found a way to control the strike zone. If you're going to age, not the worst way. He's kind of aging gracefully. It's just that at first base, the power demands are so high, right? Mm-hmm. You can get somebody fall out of bed and hit 30 home runs as a first baseman. So if your first baseman has 11, you know, the 385 on-base percentage doesn't quite look so fancy because you don't have the power. So, yeah, it is a weird statistical profile, and, you know, it'll be an interesting one to see what happens if it gets to the Hall of Fame discussions and all that stuff. I've always thought that Ted Simmons, for instance, should be in the Hall of Fame because his numbers were extraordinary for a catcher, but he played other positions. He didn't stick a catcher the whole time. A lot of it was on-base related. His best years were in the 70s, and the 70s were a low offense era. People don't adjust for that, so I don't know. Legacies are a tricky thing. I think that, you know, for me, Mauer's legacy is secure. He was a phenomenal player, but, you know, we'll have to see how that goes.
And because you brought it up, your similar batters through age 30 for Buster Posey, from least to most similar, Thurman Munson, Miguel Tejada, Gabby Hartnett, old tomato face, Troy Tulowitzki, Glenn Wright, Barry Larkin, Michael Young, Jose Vidro, Joe Mauer is number two, and Victor Martinez is most comparable through age 30. So that's pretty good.
And Jose Vidro always gets a mention, so that's always good.
Jonah, I'm reading through Ken Rosenthal this morning. He wrote a piece specifically about the Orioles and how ownership there may slowly change over to the two younger Angelosi, I think is actually the plural. And in it, he writes that Peter Angelos never found anyone he trusted to run the international department. The Orioles have been famously avoiding that market for seemingly years. And to me, it always seemed curious that they were doing so. It doesn't seem like enough of a reason to get out of a market that has brought so many stars into the game. I wonder if that makes any sense to you, or if you've, you know, done any talking to the Orioles over your career and kind of figured out why that's the case.
The Orioles are a strange team because it feels like a lot of what they do is colored by their weird TV deal situation, and I actually get to invoke the Expos for a reason this time. When they moved in 2004, there was a territorial dispute because, you know, Baltimore said, well, we had the D.C. area, and then it became, here is this weird TV deal that's going to skew more and more toward D.C. It's going to start with Baltimore. It's going to go more and more toward the Nets, and it feels like almost, it's strange, like they're handcuffing themselves financially or whatever in preparation for this thing hurting them financially. They don't go out and get free agents. And they don't spend money in some ways. Now, Baltimore as a market is not New York or Boston, but listen, you got to hang with those teams unless you're Tampa Bay, which is totally giving up trying. I mean, they just don't spend money at all. You know, there is that. You're going to get a little bit of that. So it's a curious thing. For international specifically, maybe they don't see the bang for the buck. Maybe they see all these, you know, failed experiments and they focus on those and don't focus on ones that work very well. But yeah, you know, Angelos and his family, I mean, it's not really him pulling the strings anymore so much, it's his extended family, but once you establish a position, maybe you just stick with it. So for whatever reason, the Masson deal, or maybe just stubbornness, it's hard for somebody to snap out of it and say, oh, wait a minute, okay, well, that's not what it is. I changed my mind, I'm totally wrong. So that might be what's going on here. Might be the TV thing, might be just stupidity.
Little side note here, Albert Almora has been scratched from the Cubs lineup due to illness. So in his place, Ian Happ will lead off and also play center field. I know we always talk about how early it is and how there's not much to be learned. And looking at, as I started the interview, asking what you thought was real of the hot starts. When is it too early for teams' pro personnel departments to begin looking over which rosters they can pick over a deadline time? Because I would think once you already know and things start to stratify between the bad and the not so bad, when you know who the sellers are going to be, you might get an opportunity to already start laying out who your scouts should be keeping an eye on when you're looking for relief arms or you're looking for some of this stuff. Again, I know it's extremely early, but it's okay to start planning. Hey, look, they've got a couple hard throwing relievers. We know they're going to be out of it. Let's get a little longer look.
Oh, make no mistake. Teams are doing this 365 days a year. I don't think this is, like, oh, June 1, time to crank it up. No, they're always doing this because there's always a possibility of something. And, you know, think back to, let's go to Ken Rosenthal. The typical Rosenthal or Jeff Passan article or whatever is written on August 1st. Cubs had been talking to Brewers for 7 years about Raleigh Fingers. And then they come. It's always like that. I mean, it's just, oh, wow, if only you had known about the backroom dealings in 1942 when they were after whoever. You know, it's always like that. So, and I think that's true. I think there's something to it. You know, I've interviewed GMs before. If you go into their office, you will always see the board behind them. The board has every level of their minor leagues, has the major leagues, and yeah, you'll see depth charts for other teams too. It's there. It's out in the open. I mean, there's an honor code or whatever. You're not supposed to take a photo and put it on Instagram, but they have this in their office. They could tell you who the backup second baseman is for the Pirates or who the third reliever is for the Twins. Everybody knows this. So I think that's very, very much in play. It's just that the intensity of it picks up, you know, whatever it is in June or what have you.
Wondering, I was looking through the Colorado Rockies the last day or so, especially since Nolan Arenado came out and tried to murder someone on the field after almost having been murdered himself. The season he's having already is off to a pretty good start. He is, in my opinion, and many others, one of the best third basemen in the game. And the Rockies have just kind of this interesting approach to finding arms to combat Coors Field and to combat the rest of the NL West. You know, it's 7-7. It's a decent run. They will miss Arenado for a couple of days. Is there anything more real about the Rockies and the moves that they've made over the offseason now that we've seen 2 weeks, 3 weeks of baseball?
Well, I mean, I think we have to go back to last year where they finally broke through and made the playoffs. So there is something there, but it's going to depend on those homegrown arms that you just cited. John Gray's off to a lousy start. Germán Márquez kind of got lit up last time out. I mean, those are the guys that they need to do well because, yes, they definitely fortified the bullpen. That's absolutely true. Although I have to tell you, Wade Davis, I don't think that he was 100% Wade Davis by the end of 2017. Mm-hmm. I think they're going to regret that contract. But, you know, having said that, they picked up multiple relievers. So that's a strategy. That's basically safeguarding and saying if our young guys can't carry, and certainly 7 innings is tough in that ballpark, if our young guys can only give us 5, maybe we can bring 4 guys out of the pen, close it out. They've got a veteran right-hander named Adam Ottavino, who's not well-known outside of Colorado, but is killing it so far this season. He's been awesome in a setup role. That's the stuff that they're going to need because you could throw in, if Kershaw started his career as a Rocky, I don't know how good he'd be. It just wears on you and wears on you. When, heck, Bill Guyvette was the general manager. This is going back a ways. I sat in his office, which was basically a cinder block office, which was inside the clubhouse. It's the weirdest thing I've ever seen. And we talked for like 2 hours about how to build the Rockies and about altitude. Nobody knows, man. Dan O'Dowd doesn't know. Bill Guyvett doesn't know. God doesn't know. And I really do think that's going to be there. So you have to work around that. You say, okay, we're going to throw a bunch of young pitching talent at it, but let's be prepared to go get five relievers. Let's be prepared to build a lineup full of mashers because we cannot rely on starting pitching to get us through. It's just too risky.
Talking with Jonah Carey on the Bernstein and McKnight show, White Sox got another look at Lucas Giolito last night, and I was trying to play the home game and sequence along with him, and it was hard to do when it just didn't look like he had confidence in his breaking ball, and that's going to be his plus pitch with a fastball. Yeah, there is good late life on it to the arm side, but it's 90, it's 91, and that's not going to get it done with that particular room, that margin for error that he lacks. But what do you think it is? It seems like both times out so far, there has been at least one pitch in his arsenal that he has tried to throw around.
Right. I mean, he needs to have them all clicking at the same time. The fastball sets up the curve and vice versa. I mean, that is a terrific curveball, obviously, when it's going, and that was what made him a great prospect in a sense because lots of people can throw 94, 95. I mean, I don't think that's it. So, yeah, you know, you're not going to get by with one pitch unless you're Mariano Rivera, pretty much. He's about the only guy. So there's certainly something to that, and it's got to come with consistency, and it might just be reps. I mean, let's go to the other young starters if we're going to go there, if we're going to be negative. Let's talk about Ronaldo Lopez. Mm-hmm. He looks dynamite, and the reason is because he can dip into his bag and go to whatever he wants in any count, at least in the very early going of the season. So, you know, different guys figure it out at different times, and I can't say for sure that Giolito's going to get this season, but, you know, if he's healthy, I do believe that he'll figure it out eventually because you don't have pitches like that. You don't have an arsenal like that and just suddenly turn into a pumpkin. It doesn't typically work that way. If you're healthy, those things work themselves out one way or another. Look around baseball this year. Look what Patrick Corbin is doing so far this year. Look what Tyler Skaggs is doing. Look at all these guys that we used to call top prospects. Oh, we forgot about them. They're pitching awesome. And it's, you know, three starts or whatever. But it is a good sign. It's a sign that if you just continue to go out there, maybe it's after 200 innings or 800 or whatever, but if you're healthy, there's a good chance you're going to figure it out. I think Giolito, if he's healthy, will eventually figure it out.
Does the same approach apply to a young hitter? Maybe Yoan Moncada, whose plate discipline numbers are interesting, to say the least. A lot of strikeouts, and he's been reticent to swing the bat, at least last season. Some just looking a lot and being patient. And I wonder, we talk about how few games he's had really at a big league level when it's all said and done. I wonder if this season is, or I guess I wonder if what's happened so far has really changed any math on what he's able to become.
I mean, he's so young still, right? Yeah. If players peak in there, used to be, we call it late 20s, now it's mid 20s, he's in his early 20s. You know, it just takes time. And, you know, to be patient and aggressive in all the best ways is something that many hitters don't figure out for a lifetime, and he's got the patient part down. You know, he might sit with a bat on his shoulder, which is unfortunate, take strike three, mm-hmm. but if he's at least figured out that he needs to be discerning, you know, there is a mechanism by which he, okay, now I've got it figured out a little bit, and I can attack pitches in the zone. I think he will get there, and of course the White Sox are aware of this. They're going to look into it. They're going to work with him, and I think he can get there. You look at his other talents, right, that he's an athletic player, that he's strong. He's got all this other stuff. This is it, pretty much. You know, if the light goes on and he goes from being a guy who's going to walk a lot but also strike out too much to just striking out a little bit less and attacking pitches, he'll get there. We know about the swing path. We know about the scouting report. We know about his natural abilities. I tend to believe in prospects barring injuries. I tend to believe that guys who are just loaded and loaded with tools, Byron Buxton, name it, the guy who you thought, it's not going to, you thought it was going to work, then you thought it wasn't going to work. It eventually works, more often than not.
It's funny you bring that up about pitch selection and swing rate, because there's that great Jeff Sullivan piece in FanGraphs about Freddie Freeman and about what's going on with him all of a sudden morphing into Joey Votto. And we spent a long time early in the show discussing it, Jonah, about, yeah, it's one thing to try to be discerning, but ultimately, either you can hit or you can't. And either it depends, can you pick up that 98-mile-an-hour fastball, and can you know that's not the slider or the cutter? That it's one thing to claim your desire to be discerning, but it's not really a tactic as much as it is an ability you either have or don't.
Yeah, I'm not a religious guy, but I think we call it God-given talent, right? I mean, that's what we're talking about here, and I think that can happen. Maybe it doesn't land on you at age 20, but that you get there through reps to some extent, but also just like you sort of master it. It's the same in the NBA, right? You come into the league and maybe you got one skill, you can dunk over a guy or whatever. You just sort of figure it all out. And, you know, Freeman seems to have figured it all out in that sense. So I think that it's where talent and reps intersect, right? You've sort of seen it all. you're still in the height of your abilities. You don't want to consolidate and work on skills development, and then you're 37 and your fast twitch reflexes have gone away. In Freeman's case, he broke in so early that he can do that. And that's a reminder, by the way, that when you look at a prospect, and we'll go right back to Moncada, if you can master double A at 20, if you can get to the big leagues at 21, if you could do all those things, that means that more likely than not, you're going to get there because you're precocious, and it gives you more time on your learning curve. Freeman breaks into the majors young. The Braves are notoriously aggressive about pushing prospects. They get to the majors young. Andrew Jones, we're going to see with the kid Acuna. These guys are so talented. They come up, and yeah, they come with flaws, and then it all works out for them, and they become stars. So, yeah, if you're looking for one sign of what it means to be a prospect and whether or not the guy's going to be good or not, see how early it is that they broke into the big leagues and see how early it is that they were able to master each level of the minors. Because if that's the case, they're probably going to be really good.
Jonah, thanks. We'll talk next week.
Thank you, guys.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.